morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 29 degrees under clear and sunny skies. Today is Thursday, March 20th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Sitka's lucrative herring fishery goes on two-hour notice as of 8 a.m. today. That means fishing could start as soon as this morning, depending on whether test samples taken by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game find a high enough percentage of mature roe in the fish. But as KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports, some fishermen are apprehensive.
Seiners who have gathered in Sitka for the sack roe herring fishery say this year's quota, at over 16,000 tons, is high. The fish in test samples are good quality. What they're worried about is the market.
The clear thing is it's a very, very, very poor, if not the poorest market situation I've ever seen. It's an extremely poor market situation.
That's Jamie Ross of Homer. His seiner is the Shadowfax. Ross has been fishing herring in Sitka since 1993. Usually by this point, he said, fishermen will have an advance price from processors. In recent years, that's been about $400 to $500 per ton. That price is then sometimes adjusted up. Last year, fishermen ended with a final price around $600 per ton. In 1996, seiners saw their highest price ever at over $1,700 per ton. But this year, Ross said, fishermen haven't received any advance price. And that has him worried.
You know, I'm not willing to, you know, come out of this fishery with no price. I mean, I can't afford that. And so I think that it's an incredibly scary situation for all of us. And, you know, the processors are really caught in the, you know, they're in a really tough position. So, you know, we have to move forward while these fish are ripening up, you know, which could be tomorrow. And, you know, oh my gosh, what do we do? And so we're trying to come up with some ideas that maybe we could help reduce the processor's risk.
One of the ideas discussed at a meeting among permit holders on Wednesday was to fish as a cooperative, an unusual step for the famously competitive herring fishery. That, however, would require the participation of all 48 seiners, and as of Wednesday night, it wasn't clear whether that would be possible or even necessary. Processors, for instance, said they were not as concerned. KCAW spoke with one processor who said the situation this year is not atypical, though markets in Asia, where the sack roe is sold, are weak, and there's an oversupply of product left over from last year. That's due in part to the big Togiak herring harvest. In 2013, fishermen in Togiak hauled in nearly 29,000 tons of herring. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
Meanwhile, the Department of Fish and Game announced that an aerial survey of Sitka Sound conducted yesterday located a group of 180 sea lions in the vicinity of Beely Rocks, north of Middle Island. A Department of Fish and Game news release says that a large biomass of herring is in the same area. The department's research vessel Kestrel also identified a number of smaller schools of herring from Stargavin Bay to Dog Point. Test samples of herring caught in the area showed a roe percentage of 9.7%. The department looks for a 10% mature roe before opening the seine fishery. Starting today, Fish and Game will issue informational updates over the radio, usually at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m., though they may occur anytime necessary. Those updates can be heard on VHF Radio, Channel 10. Sitka's Fish to Schools program will be easier to reproduce in other communities, thanks to a new handbook from the Sitka Conservation Society. A guide to serving local fish in school cafeterias was published online last week by the Society. It contains everything someone needs to know to navigate the sometimes choppy waters to get locally caught seafood onto public school menus. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has more.
Tracy Gagne coordinates the Fish to Schools program for the Sitka Conservation Society. She's had to do some pioneering work to get seafood harvested and processed in Sitka into schools located just a block or two away. Fish to Schools is about creating a network, and it will be a little different in every town. The resource guide is about
how to access fish, what DEC standards need to be followed to ensure that the product is safe for the schools, and just some good stories included in there about, you know, how to make it go in your community.
The DEC is the State Department of Environmental Conservation, an agency which looms large over the management of institutional food practices in Alaska. Sections on procurement and processing strategies and legalities, what's allowed, take up about a quarter of the 26-page manual. Sitka's Fish to Schools program emerged out of the Community Health Summit in 2010. It's not the first such program in the state, but it might be the most comprehensive. Fish to Schools has helped put seafood on the plates of most Sitka students twice a month. Only Baranoff Elementary, which lacks a kitchen on site, is not included in the program. Students at Pacific High, Sitka's alternative school, prepare their own fish lunches once a week. But the guide is not just a how-to, it's also a why. There are 6 student lesson plans in the guide called Stream to Plate.
I've been working on these lessons for the last 3 years with our Kikyushihin third graders, actually. So it's been really fun to work on them, develop them, refine them over the years. So the lessons are really geared for elementary school, and I think that they really can be adapted up or down for the grade level.
Both the Sitka School District and Mount Edgecombe have participated in a state reimbursement program for locally sourced food called Nutritional Alaskan Food for Schools. Last year, the program kicked in nearly $80,000 for the purchase of local seafood in Sitka. The Sitka School Board earlier this year passed a resolution in support of continued funding for Nutritional Alaskan Food for Schools. The governor has budgeted $3 million for the project, but only for 1 year. Locally, Fish to Schools has relied heavily on donated seafood. Ganyu believes a funding model will be important to the future of the program and an economic boon to the seafood industry.
I think the biggest thing is really trying to figure out a sustainable way to source seafood for the schools. And, you know, one way is encouraging the district to purchase it and make it a priority. And hopefully, you know, with this increased demand by students that, you know, they'll make this an important thing to budget for.
And to help with demand, the Fish to Schools Resource Guide has one other component, a mouthwatering recipe for teriyaki salmon. Reporting in Sitka with help from Melissa Marconi-Wenzel, I'm Robert Woolsey.
You can find a link to a guide to serving local fish in school cafeterias on our website, kcaw.org. At 6:30 this evening in the Blatchley Middle School Library, Tracy Ganyu, School Board President Long Garrison, and Sitka Local Foods Network Director Lisa Sadler-Hart will give a presentation on efforts to establish a statewide Fish to Schools program. And the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly held a marathon meeting on Monday with hours of public comment on a variety of issues, including a proposed rezone of property uphill from Bear Valley. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Paul Hamilton owns a big chunk of land next to Ketchikan's 3rd Avenue bypass, and it's zoned low-density residential. The trouble is, it's a steep mountain made of rock. With the current zoning that's in place, he can blast that rock, drill it, take it out in truckloads, all kinds of noisy construction, because he's allowed to develop the property in order to make it usable. But Hamilton has a different use in mind. He wants to crush the rock on site and sell it commercially to make money while developing the land. That requires a heavy industrial zone, which led us here. Before we go further, I should state that Hamilton's property is next to the KRBD radio station, and KRBD's board of directors is opposed to rezoning the property to heavy industrial. The radio station isn't the only neighbor opposed to the change, though. 6 individuals also protested the rezone, all residents of nearby Bear Valley. Here's Donald Robel.
Industrial zoning is no place in Bear Valley. Heavy industrial allows for uses like junkyards or burning waste, much less the constant sounds of heavy equipment over our neighborhood.
There also was concern over dust, improperly blasted rocks, strong vibrations, safety for young library patrons, and water running off the excavated mountainside. 2 people spoke in favor of the rezone. One of them is George Librand, a longtime local contractor and engineer who's working with the owners on the site development plan. Librand says serious excavation is needed for the property and it will take place no matter what. The only difference that the rezone will make is that it will also allow rock crushing. The plan restricts that activity to 30 days a year and only between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m., and Librand says that it should not create significant noise.
The nearest house this gentleman got up and spoke is 1,000 feet from where the crush is. The nearest, okay? I've been through this noise and vibration ever since I've been an engineer. Rock crushes at 1,000 feet are not producers of noise above the existing background level.
Librand added that the crushers would be placed behind a rock berm to further mitigate any noise. Despite his assurances, those who opposed the rezone were not swayed, and the majority of the assembly agreed that a rezone to heavy industrial went too far. The actual recommendation was a split rezone, with part of the property changed to general commercial and another section heavy industrial. Borough Assembly member Glenn Thompson asked why not change the second section to light industrial rather than heavy and let Hamilton crush and sell rock until the development is complete through a special use permit, because the final use for the property, as proposed by the owner, would be compatible with light industrial. Planning Director Tom Williams says the code doesn't really allow for that. He says that the regulations are in place to provide a distinction between light and heavy industrial use. Assemblymember Agnes Moran proposed sending the issue back to the Planning Commission to look into creating a plan that would change the proposed heavy industrial section to light industrial. The motion passed 5-1 with Mike Painter voting no. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. To read comments on our stories on Facebook, click on the Facebook link. No registration or login is required. And to have KCAW News headlines tweeted directly to your smartphone, tablet, or computer, click on the Twitter link. It's 29 degrees in downtown Sitka under sunny skies. It's a bit of a mixed bag in terms of regional weather today. Most communities will see a cloudy morning and sunny afternoon. Sitka, Port Alexander, and Cake will see a mix of snow and rain, and Yakutat will be sunny today. Temperatures across the region in the upper 30s to low 40s. Stay tuned for NPR's Morning Edition. I'll be back with you with a live local interview at 8:18 a.m. It's just about 1 minute after 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.